Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Hello and welcome to episode 184 of Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli. If you are a new listener, welcome. I have a free ebook for you on how you can increase your sexual desire. You can find the link in the show notes, specifically wrote for women. You can download it on the link that I provided. I love men, but I feel like I needed to kind of create a gender-specific resource. So if you're identifying as a man or non-binary, I have tons of stuff that coming up for you, but this specific ebook is tailored for women. So today we're going to talk about sex and diabetes. Many of my clients, that they get the diagnosis of diabetes, they feel like their sex life is over. If they're single, it's really hard to navigate it. In a long-term relationship, at times they feel like they're not able to have successful sexual experiences. So I'm very excited about having two experts today to talk about this topic with you. If diabetes is not your main primary challenge, many of the concepts that you're talking about would apply to any other kind of physical health challenges. Because when we are experiencing physical challenges, medical challenges, I guess that's a better way of saying it, it can impact our self-esteem, it can impact our performance in bed, and it's important to learn and cultivate skills that will help you to be successful in sexual experiences. So today we have two wonderful authors and diabetes educators on our show. Janice Rosler is the 2008-2009 AADE Diabetes Educator of the Year. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex therapist, certified diabetes educator, registered dietitian, and award-winning medical media producer award. Donna Rice is the past president of American Association of Diabetes Educators leader and has held numerous positions nationally and on a state and local level to advance the care of individuals with diabetes. She's a registered nurse and certified diabetes educator who speaks on a variety of diabetes-related topics with a passion and expertise in sexual health. In addition to launching a national sexual health program in Farmington Hill, Donna is also the author and co-author of numerous consumer and peer-reviewed articles and books related to diabetes and sexual health. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Janice and Donna. Hello and welcome to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am very excited and honored to welcome Janice Rosler and Donna Rice to our show. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting us.
We're excited to be here.
I am very excited about this conversation as well. I know right before we started recording, I was sharing with you guys that I know a lot about sex, and I have some information about kind of like a medical challenges, but I think the overlap of diabetes when it comes to sex and sexuality, I think that's an area that hasn't been explored as much. So I'm very curious, how did you guys get interested in this topic?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Where do we start?
Well, okay, I'm Janice. I'll go first. I started out in the diabetes world as a registered dietitian, and I still remember there was a couple. I was seeing the husband to help him review his meal planning. We met in an office at an endocrinologist's, place. And then I went out into the waiting room, and there was a woman there sitting by herself, and she was crying. So I sat down next to her. No one else was in the waiting room. And I sat down and quickly learned that she was the wife of the patient that I had just seen. And I asked if I could help her. And she said, I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. My husband's not the same person I married. We are having so much trouble in our marriage and in our relationship. And I just don't think I can live with this anymore. And I was dumbfounded because I didn't know what to tell her. I didn't have any handout to give her. I didn't have any book to recommend. And at that point, I decided that was the direction I wanted to go in, that I needed to create something or help couples. There are enough dietitians who are helping them with their meal planning, but there weren't enough diabetes trained healthcare providers who were helping them with this piece. And I think the couples piece is so huge, because if you're inviting a partner or a spouse to support what the person does, to help them make food decisions, to help support that they get regular physical activity, that's all wonderful and well and good. But if the most intimate part of their relationship is unfulfilling, is full of anger, is full of hurt because of performance issues or frustrations or personal self-esteem issues, that spouse or partner is not going to help them if they're angry at them or if they're frustrated. So that's the reason that I started moving in this direction. And this is, 30 years ago. So Donna, I'll let you.
Hi, Donna Rice. Very similar experience. I was a program manager and managed a large diabetes program. And through counseling, multiple people, the same topic kept emerging of sexual dysfunction. What do I do about this? And I think, nurses, dietitians were really the most trusted health professionals. So people felt very at ease and open to ask that question. So I talked to my director at the time. And she connected me with a young urologist, and we launched a sexual health program back in 1990 that became a very national program and the go-to place for understanding sexual health, and just realized back then that this has been a totally untapped area and that there was a huge need to really incorporate that type of education within any kind of chronic disease management.
What a needed area. And I know you also talk about it in the your book about the medical providers and at times even therapists not talking about sex and sexuality. And first of all, I think if as providers, we're not bringing it up, unless the person is very fed up, like what Janice said, people are not going to talk about it. They're not just going to feel that's not appropriate. They don't think like they don't know how to ask about it. So I'm glad that you guys are providing this tools for people. Okay, this is important. And this is how you can go about asking for what you need. Because I think sometimes with many of even my therapist colleagues, they're not comfortable about asking clients about sex. But it's my experience that whenever, if I'm asking my clients that are not sex therapists, sex therapy clients, they welcome those conversations because we don't have enough information.
Oh, exactly. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And we really, Donna and I speak often to healthcare providers at national conferences. And that's a big piece of it, is to help them get over whatever personal discomfort they may have with the topic. Because we're all humans. We're all growing up in a similar American culture where this is something we don't really talk about privately, even in an appointment with a physician or with another healthcare provider. So we encourage in the book, we suggest ways for someone with diabetes or someone who loves them, loves someone with diabetes, how they can help bring up the topic with a healthcare provider. And on the flip side, we help healthcare providers figure out how to fit that in to the conversation. And we understand that there's a lot that has to be covered medically in a very short amount of time. But it's so critical. We try to help streamline that and give everyone tips from both sides.
Right. And it's even getting over the discomfort of discussing it. Another big barrier is, well, what do I do with this person and where do I refer them to? And if you look in your communities, I mean, the sex therapy or counselors, they're sometimes hard to find and there's not a great connection with resources today. So I think one of the really good things that Janice and I try to do is really, how do we connect the dots there and how do we create the resources or educational materials and, you know, really make it easy for the healthcare provider to not only discuss it, but to be able to know how to refer it or what resources are available out there for that particular person.
Such an important point that you mentioned, that I think many times my physician colleagues are telling me, okay, if I ask about it and I don't have resources and I don't know what to do about it, what would be the point of it? So sometimes they avoid the conversation because of that. So I think that's very important to kind of think about having this plan of what would be the next step if my client's coming in with this challenges. So tell us a little bit about what are some of the common challenges that you see in this population when it comes to sex and sexuality?
Well, this is Janice. So Dan and I usually kind of split this where she's developed and actually launched male sexual health clinic in her history and done a lot of things in that department. And I work a lot with women and also men. But so we kind of split it down those lines. So I guess if we do ladies first, maybe. So what I'll say is, first of all, across the board, when people have diabetes, they don't always have the energy level that they would like to have based on their blood sugar level. So they may have blood sugar swings, which causes fatigue, may cause nervousness. So a person with diabetes may not always feel good, may not always feel sexual. And so that's a big piece really for men and women. Mm-hmm. As far as women are a bit of a mystery. The research is rather new on women, because certainly it's easier to see if a man is getting a positive response, if a man's excited. You know, you just have to see just changes in the penis, changes in the erection. And a woman with diabetes, the problems that they do develop would be problems with lubrication, vaginal lubrication. They may need to use lubricants because that could also lead to pain. They, based on the friction, but they could also have pain anyway. Based on, I wish I could say we knew why. We don't know a lot about why things happen to women who have diabetes. We know that it could be hormonal. It could be emotional. There's a big connection between diabetes and depression, especially in women. It could be self-esteem issues. We know that women have a very strong mental connection when it comes to sex and sexuality. So if they've gained weight, especially common in type 2 diabetes, if a woman's gained weight, she may not feel good about how she looks. If she's taking injections or testing her fingers and for blood tests and or wearing an insulin pump and she has a lot of black and blue marks for where she's kind of moved things around and tape marks, she may not want that to be seen. There's also shame and guilt. A lot of people are blamed because they have diabetes. It's not their fault. You can't just get diabetes out of the air. And I know that they say there's a strong component to a link between lifestyle. If you're physically active and you maintain a healthy body weight, you are more likely to avoid getting diabetes. But not every person who's inactive gets it. So we know that there is some type of genetic possibility. And if you don't have that possibility, you're not going to get it. You'll get something else. Perhaps. So the blame shouldn't be, oh, you ate too much candy and look, and why are you taking that extra piece of cake? There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of blame. There's family pressure. So women have a big emotional piece. And you may have shared with your audience Rosemary Bassan's approach to female sexuality, which is very different than Masters and Johnson's. And her approach to the female sexuality and attraction, by the way, just so your audience knows, I'm a board certified sex therapist as well as a diabetes educator. So we'll throw that one in.
Excellent.
So we know that women can enjoy sexuality without having an orgasm. They can enjoy it with an orgasm. They can enter into a sexual opportunity when they're turned on or enter just because they're bored or because they just want to be close to that person or want to be nurturing to that person. So we can go in through a lot of doorways and have a good time anyway. So it's very different than the Masters and Johnson's understanding, which seems to be specifically toward men and it still pertains to men, where men, as they get turned on, they kind of climb up that hill, there's a plateau, then there's the orgasm, and then they come back down. Women are kind of circular. We can enter in any door, we can have a great time, and then leave the door. And so there's a lot more flexibility. But those are the kind of things that we see in women, is the pain, taking longer to get aroused, the vaginal dryness, the emotional piece. So that's really where it is when it comes to women with diabetes, and there's a lot they can do about it.
And I love that you talked about the societal pressure of it. So before I was doing focusing on sex therapy, most of my practice was on treatments of eating disorders. And I feel sometimes the sex therapy world and the eating disorder treatment world is kind of in a clash, because sometimes I hear when people coming and talking about the relational issue, some of my colleagues say, like, why they just don't lose weight, that helps with the relationship, that helps with the kind of health medical aspect of the things. But that's kind of like giving in and adding another kind of like a stressor to the person, because what we know it really matters is kind of a lifestyle habits that people have, like movement, those kind of things. It's not necessarily about one's body size. So I can imagine that if someone hears that you have this condition because of the bad, poor choices, quote unquote, that you made around food, then that kind of creates some dilemma around pleasure and experiencing pleasure. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I'll let Dana handle the boys.
Sure. Yeah. And I think what Janice talked about, some of the emotions, definitely is very, very similar in men. But one of the biggest challenges, I think, is really around the communication piece. So oftentimes when men are confronted with the problem or they have the problem once and maybe they try again and, you know, they can't get an erection, most of the time they're not going to try a third time. And then they put up this huge barrier of communication. So if, you know, their partner tries to be a little bit intimate or give them a hug, they kind of shy away and they get preoccupied with different things and always have an excuse. And I think one of the biggest challenges is really starting to break down that communication barrier. And I know both Janice and I have talked about how, you know, you almost have to have them both in the room and kind of be like the kind of the referee in in a way, and really helping them understand each other's perspectives and really understand what's going on. And with chronic disease, I think there's so much blame that goes on. And we talk a lot about how do we really deal with that blame and really looking at the disease. And if you explain the etiology of the disease so that they understand that, you know, this is diabetes is a progressive disease, and this happens as a result of uncontrolled diabetes because it does affect nerves and blood vessels. So it really takes the blame from the person or both people to really put it onto the disease. And I think that that's an important element. And I could say with counseling people, they almost seem to like relax and take a deep breath saying, you know, they didn't realize it. Diabetes and its effects never even entered into that whole realm of what they were thinking. So it's really, really helpful for them to understand that there is a reason for this and it's nothing you've done. It's not your fault, and that there are treatments and there is hope. And I think if we can instill those messages, I think that from a counseling perspective, it's really, really helpful, and people are very willing to work and try different things and really come to some kind of, you know, resolution around their problem.
I love that you focus on kind of externalizing it and also kind of focusing, okay, this is the problem. How can we solve it as a couple? Because sometimes I feel in a heterosexual relationship, the entire sexual performance evolves around erection. So if the erection is not there, sometimes my female client think about, okay, I'm not attractive enough. Right. The partner gets very overwhelmed and anxious. And we know that's not helping with kind of performance and erectile functioning. So it can be very confusing. And at times I feel it's easier when a couple, and I want to hear your thoughts on that, that they're together for a while and they know each other and they've been intimate. It's my experience in a new relationship, in a dating relationship, that can be very complicated. Can you tell us more about that? That what are some of the challenges people have when they want to be intimate, but they have this condition in a new relationship?
Well, dating, I've done a lot of writing about dating, and what I have found is that the person who you're dating, if you have diabetes, the person you're dating is going to take the cue from you. So if you're comfortable with your diabetes and you're comfortable with taking care of it and whatever goes along with it, they'll see you're relaxed and they will take that cue and say, oh, I guess there's nothing to worry about. But if you're sitting there and you're like, oh, shoot, now I have to do this. Oh, my gosh, I got to get some snacks before we get romantic, because what if my blood sugar goes low and then I might fall asleep? And, you know, and if you're worried, they're going to go, whoa, why am I dating this person? This sounds so complicated and they sound so overwhelmed. So the person with diabetes, that, you know, that's one reason that we wrote this book that just came out, which is Intimacy and Diabetes, is to help people who have diabetes and help people who love them and help them understand that, you know, the more confidence that you have in your body and in how to deal with your diabetes, then, you know, the more confidence that you give off in the relationship. And one thing you mentioned about the externalizing, because I keep wearing all these different hats. I feel like a Janus commercial. I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist, which I am. I consider myself a narrative therapist primarily. And so I love to externalize the diabetes. I had this couple once, I don't know if you recall, when Prince Charles was married to Princess Diana, there was this whole thing about how Camilla Parker Bowles was the third one in their marriage.
Right.
And so I had a couple who really were struggling a lot with blame when it came to diabetes. If he couldn't get an erection, she was like, well, you don't love me. You don't care about me, or, you know, everything. You and your diabetes. They were one. So what we did is we externalized the diabetes. And I said, name it. And they chose Camilla. And they said from that point on, it made such a difference, because now the partner with diabetes was good and loving and wonderful. And that stinking Camilla kept bothering them in the bedroom. So it became, you know, two against one. It became a joke. It added humor. It added play. And when things didn't go right, when he did fall asleep, or when he wasn't able to maintain an erection the way he wanted to, they both were like, okay, well, Camilla, we're revoking your television privileges, Camilla. So it brought, you know, and as you know, sex in its best form is fun and pleasurable and connecting and intimate. And that's what we want to hopefully help couples get back to, because diabetes makes it full of pressure and performance and what's wrong with me and how come my body won't cooperate. So externalizing it is a really wonderful thing.
Yeah, and we do a lot in our book. We put a lot of little tips in our book. And one of the things that we really find very, very helpful is to take the kind of the pressure off the performance and don't focus on the performance. And, you know, especially with men, they're performers. They feel they're responsible for their satisfaction and their partner's satisfaction. And if we get back to the love and the caring and the intimacy and the touching, that I think really, really can help. So we spent a lot of time in our book kind of putting together a lot of tips and thoughts around being intimate and the enjoyment of it and the beauty of it versus the actual performance. And I think that's I think really, really important.
Such an important point with kind of like increasing like people's, like broadening people's definition of sex and sexuality and intimacy, because I feel sometimes people have this very narrow that it's penile, vaginal penetration in a heterosexual couple, and that's what it is. And it's not even enjoyable for many people. There are so many different ways that they can have fulfilling sex life, and it's more fun and connecting. Mm-hmm. But because that's how that they learn that it's supposed to be, they're kind of limiting themselves that way. It's interesting when it comes to dating. The other thing that comes to my mind, and I know, Donna, it seems like it's within your areas of expertise, is with men, if there is a consistent erectile functioning challenge, I have clients that they use injection, they have pumps, mm-hmm. all of those.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that can be tricky, because then that gives them, like, it's impacted how spontaneous they can be. And it would be hard to have those conversations. So please tell us, how can people navigate that piece?
Yeah, I know. And it's interesting that you say that. And that is really kind of the center. That conversation was very, very common with treatment devices and how to use them when you're in a committed relationship, or how do you use them spontaneously. And I could tell you a really wonderful story about a man who was dating different women, and he used injection therapy, and he'd go in the bathroom to do his injection, and then he'd come out and they'd engage in about 15, 20 minutes of this wonderful foreplay, and he had a great erection, and none of his partners realized he was doing it. And then, so, I mean, it's just really, it's working within each individual in their framework of what they need. Men that are and women that are in committed relationships, it's a lot easier, and most women are understanding, and a lot of times the women would help them with the device. If it was a vacuum device or it was an injection, they'd get very, very much involved in the care and in the process of it all. So it just really, I think you have to look at it from one individual to the next and kind of what their lifestyle is and what they would be happy doing and how they want to actually present it as well. We have some men who are very out in the open, and you know, they bring their vacuum pump and they say, this is the way it is, and take it or leave it kind of discussion. And it works out really, really well. So it's just really helping them through that conversation and how they're going to handle the situation. And oftentimes they just want to talk through it because they know what they want. And it's just, how do they present it and talk through it? So you just have to really think in terms of each individual and how to handle it from one person to the next.
And I like that you're talking about kind of individualized, tailored approach for each person. And I think the important piece is for people to be clear about their own game plan, right? How am I going to approach it? Because sometimes my client, they're worried about, like, am I telling her? I'm not telling her or him. What the situation is. But if they know what works for them, that would be kind of like they will have an easier time. And also, I have the same experience as you're having. I know many of my clients that they're dating, at least I'm hearing from my female clients, clients in a heterosexual relationships, that they're okay with their partner using all of these devices. They don't necessarily have a huge reaction about it. They know this day and age, it's kind of a common knowledge. So I think people get surprised if they choose to share that with information with the partner, right, how open the partner would be possibly.
Exactly.
No, definitely. And one thing I do want to share, there's a lot of acceptance for pills, for Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, and Stendra. And I want to let everyone know that these pills only work in about 60% of men who have diabetes. So they should be aware that if they don't work for them, when they use them properly, remember, you just don't take the pill, you also have to engage in some type of stimulation, either visual, mental, or physical. You can't just sit and wait for it to happen. You have to help it. If it doesn't work, if they don't get the erection they were hoping for, they should realize that there's a lot of other options. There is an option for every single man, right, or every single person with a penis. Let's say it that way. So the thing is, we even have a penile sleeve, and a penile sleeve is kind of a firm kind of, I guess you could call it a jacket, that you actually put on a penis when it's not erect, and then you put a condom over it, and that shape enables the couple to have intercourse, even though the penis isn't erect. So they can still have that intimacy if the man has such severe damage, blood flow damage, there's an option for him. Another thing too is that penile implants are incredibly natural, much safer. Now they have almost no infection risk at all. It's extraordinarily low, especially if you're working with a very well-seasoned surgeon. And it's natural, and your partner does not have to know at all, never has to know, because you can't see it. So there are options for all men when it comes to this. And, you know, just a reminder, Austin Powers in his movies used a vacuum pump. So if they want to say they're a superhero and they bring their superhero tool with them, you know, in other words, see if there's a way to engage it as a game, as, you know, I hate to use the word foreplay, because foreplay implies that we're getting to something else. This is the hors d'oeuvre before the main event, like you mentioned, you know, focusing exclusively on the actual intercourse, you know, penile vaginal intercourse in heterosexual couples, but just the play. So, you know, having it be part of it. And the thing is, with same-sex couples, with, you know, couples that are all a whole variety of different gender identities, these things, these issues, the main lesson is that there is a treatment for everyone. Right. There's a way to have comfort. We want to help them communicate their needs, mm-hmm, be able to say them, be able to understand, support each other, and help the bedroom be a playground instead of a place that's filled with tension and performance judgment.
Yes. And just to jump into, just to thank you for your show. And I think one of the things that's really underestimated is the peer-to-peer and the value of peers. So peer groups, and I know one of the things that I did in my practice is really connect them with people who've been through maybe a certain treatment option or people who have certain problems, because oftentimes talking peer-to-peer on tips and stuff like that, it's really, really powerful. Having a venue to talk about it or to listen, I think, is so important. So shows like yours, I think, too, I mean, just the work of what the sex therapist and the counselor does, how do we connect to them? And just giving people resources to connect to people that can have these conversations, I think, is so important and so needed today. So just, you know, thanking you, too, for your show and having this available to so many viewers, I think, is really commendable.
Thank
Absolutely.
You so much for that.
I agree with that one.
So I think you guys are such a great resource in the community, and the fact that, like, you're giving this information that many of the healthcare providers are also, they don't have it. They don't know where to go. So I know knowing that there are providers like yourself with years and years of experience putting out this wonderful resource, it can be a good start for people to know, okay, this is something we can talk about it, and these are the resources. So I'm sure many of our listeners, they're kind of curious about where they can have access to some of these great materials that you guys are worked with and throughout the years and developed and curated. So please tell us about what are some of the best places to get those things.
Well, the book is out right now, hot off the presses. It's called Intimacy and Diabetes, and it's available from the American Diabetes Association. I think it's called shopdiabetes.org, but it's also available from Amazon or any of the online vendors, book vendors, and it's only in an ebook form. So the price is very, very reasonable, and you just download it and you have it. And one thing I wanted to say is, in addition to information about sexual performance and sexual activity, we also have information in the book about scams. Unfortunately, people fall prey to a lot of scams about, you know, breast enhancement and penile enhancement and things like that. We talk about that. We talk about herbs and the different types of things you might find in a store. Are they worth buying? Do they work? Don't they work? Right. And also in the end, we also have a lot of communication tips, because this is a team. This is a, you know, it's a team effort in the bedroom. And finally, at the very end, we have recipes that have aphrodisiac ingredients. So, right. Because our goal for the book is not just to educate, but to infuse fun once again back into the bedroom for some couples who haven't had fun in that arena in a very long time. So the book, definitely, I have a website, dearjanis.com, dearjanis.com. And I'm also, I tweet occasionally. So those are the places where I can be found.
And just another point about the book, we do have a lot of resources within the book too, for ways to connect with sex therapists and different resources and communities. Also resources within the diabetes with American Association of Diabetes Educators and the American Diabetes Association. There is educational materials and resources as well.
And I'm very grateful that you guys offered me a copy of the electronic copy of the book. And I highly, highly recommend it to all of my colleagues that they're even working with any kind of a population to have that handy, because you don't know when would be the next time that a client walks in and they need that resources. And I think having the peace of mind that at least I have a place that they can refer them to, or I can look up this information, it can be very reassuring and empowering.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in to our show. And it was my pleasure to talking to you. And thank you so much for contributing to our field with doing this wonderful talks and books and all of this great resources.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Like Donna said, we're honored to be here. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope you found the content useful. And if this is the area that you're interested in, I highly recommend our guest's book. Give me tons of good information about this area. And more importantly, I encourage you to think about that your sex life is important and it's worth your attention. So no matter what kind of a medical condition you're experiencing or what kind of a physical ability you have, you deserve to have great, fulfilling sexual experiences. It's one of the ongoing joke with my husband is that says I have a sex therapy podcast for rest of us, because sometimes I hear on other episodes or the podcaster talk about the stimulating and fun things that a small part of population are engaging in. But my goal is to make sure that no matter what background you have, what kind of body you have, you continue to have wonderful sexual experiences. I hope this episode was relevant to you, and I would love to connect with you in social media. My handle is @sexologypodcast, and I love you for tuning into this episode, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.